Dickens opened his bright green front door after breakfast on Saturday the 25th of January and stepped out into another mild day. It was partially cloudy with a gentle breeze, but there was no sign of frost or snow. Perfect weather to walk to work, despite the stinking cold he was suffering from. Later that day, he would send a letter complaining that everybody seems to be ill, more or less, all along of the late unseasonable weather. It was a publication day for Household Words, and Dickens set off to travel the distance of just under 2 miles to his office. A fine-boned and dapperly dressed 38-year-old, with a light step and jaunty air. 3 weeks earlier, the Morning Post had reminded its readers that the new year was the birthday of new undertakings, social, literary, and commercial, a turning point in all men's careers. And Dickens, too, was keen to get on. A later caricature would depict him walking with almost comical determination in a foot race. He completed the 12-mile course in 3 hours, and his usual pace was equally impressive, striding along with his regular 4 miles an hour swing, according to his son Charlie, his lips slightly working, as he thought of something or someone he might later try to turn into a piece of writing. Almost all this writing required close daily contact with the city where he lived. London was a vile place, he had increasingly come to believe, telling the novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton in February that whenever he came back from abroad and saw that great heavy canopy of smoke sinking over the rooftops, I wonder what on earth I'd do there. The short answer was that he needed it to think about and to think with. In many ways, it was the most important relationship of his life. For a week or a fortnight, I can write prodigiously in a retired place, as at Broadstairs, and a day in London sets me up again and starts me. He had written to John Forster from Switzerland in 1846 while trying to begin Dombey and Son. But the toil and labour of writing day after day without that magic lantern is immense. My figures seem disposed to stagnate without crowds about them. He needed to be surrounded by life in order to recreate it on the page. Dickens told an American visitor the following year that he had trained his eye and ear to let nothing escape him, and he had already given the same skill to David Copperfield, who boasts when he visits his friend Traddles that I looked at nothing that I know of, but I saw everything, including the odd detail that his blacking brushes and blacking were among his books on the top shelf behind a dictionary. In 1867, Dickens would explain his tactics in more detail to the Methodist pastor G.D. Carrow. When in the worst parts of the city, my invariable precaution was to seem not to notice any person or thing in particular. I would walk along slowly, preserving an air of preoccupation and affecting as nearly as possible the ways of a collector of house rents or of a physician going his rounds. When any scene of a special interest attracted my notice, I usually halted at a crossing, as if waiting for a conveyance, or as if undecided which way to go. Or else I would stop and purchase some trifle, chatting with the vendor and taking my time making a selection, or would order a glass of half and half, a mixture of ale and bitter, wait for the froth to subside, and then consume an hour in sipping it to the bottom. I suppose, sir, that I know London better than any one other man of all its millions. Even walking to work could produce a tempting sideways glimpse of something that might lodge in his mind, and this type of first-hand research was especially important at a time when the country as a whole appeared undecided about which way to go.